ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So last time we saw in the previous two verses, there were four instructions that were given. One is sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva. So renunciation, giving up of sankalpas. And I told you sankalpa is fanciful thinking, fanciful imagination. And the greatest fanciful imagination that we have is there is happiness in the world. And if we can give that up, because it is only an imagination, because the truth is that there is no happiness in the world. So if we can give that up, it will automatically take care of the desires. The reason for desires is because I want happiness. And where do I find the happiness? In the world is the thinking. So if we can give up this false notion, incorrect notion that there is happiness in the world, the desires automatically will be controlled. Bhagwan is saying sarvan asheshataha. So all the desires to be given up. And then the mind and indriyas, the mind and the senses have to be controlled. It's automatic. If the desires are controlled, the mind and senses will automatically be controlled. The reason that the mind is not under control is because the senses are running out, and the senses are running out because of this notion that they will find happiness in the world. So if that happiness in the world notion is corrected, everything else will follow. And then Bhagwan also said, shanai shanai uparamet, slowly, slowly withdraw the mind. Because for births and births, the mind is used to this sort of extrovertedness. Suddenly, if you pull it back, it is not going to happen. So it has to be done slowly, can be done either through jnana, knowledge, or through yoga, whichever way. And then buddhya dhriti grahitaya. So hold the mind in the intellect. Means the intellect to controlling the mind. Because the intellect is the one that is telling us the correct things. And if the mind is listening to the intellect, then it is buddhya dhriti grahitaya. Means the buddhi has held it firmly. That is what it means. Dhriti grahitaya means grahan, means to hold. So the intellect is holding the mind firmly, and then atma samsthamana, then hold the mind firmly and do what with it? Keep it in itself, in the self. Self and mind are not different. We think they are different. So hold it in the, if all the desires are removed from the mind, it is the self. That is it. There is no difference then. Okay? And then don't let the mind think of anything. Now, next instruction is verse 26.
Yato yato nischarati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyamyat atmanneva vasham nayet.
From whatever cause the restless and the unsteady mind wanders away from that, let him restrain it and bring it back to be under the control of the self alone. This let him means the yogi, the one who is meditating. Yato yato means wherever, wherever. Nischarati, chara is to move around. So nischarati means the wherever, wherever the mind is wandering, is moving around. Okay? This mana, manas chanchalam and asthiram. So two words are used here. This mind, which is asthira and which is chanchala. Chanchala is fickle-minded, fickle, and asthira is unsteady. So they kind of seem to be synonyms. But the difference is that chanchala, fickle-mindedness means where the mind is jumping from one topic to the next. So, you know, there are so many thoughts going through our mind. So the mind is not being held firmly because it's jumping from one to another topic. Whereas asthira means it is thinking of one topic only, but within the topic it is jumping. So it's the same topic, but then it's jumping. You know, it's because we want the mind to be aham brahmasmi. Okay. Whereas if the mind is like, oh, should I worship Krishna? Now think of Krishna and then think of some Vishnu and then think of Devi that way. So the topic is the Lord, but then within the topic it is wavering. And so that is asthira or unsteady. And chanchal is when it's going from topic to another topic. So from wherever this mind is, one means bring it back. So niyamaita means bring it under niyama, bring it under control. That is what it means. From wherever it is wandering, bring it back, bring it under control, and then keep it under the control of the self. Now, how do I control the mind? Like, what are the methods for us? The first thing about controlling the mind is to understand that I am not the mind. That is number one we must know. Because only if I am not the mind can I control it. If I am only the mind, then I am only wandering around. What is there to control then? So it is to be understood that we are not the mind. And that is why also Bhagwan is giving the instruction that control the mind means, if Bhagwan is saying control the mind means it is possible by some reason, I may not know it, but it is possible. Because Bhagwan can never give an instruction which is totally impossible to do. Then what is the point of that instruction? So the first thing is to understand that I am not the mind. Second thing is to understand that a purified mind will be more under control. And what is a purified mind? Absence of likes and dislikes. So there shouldn't be too much, you know, like the teenagers talk, either they love or they hate. Shouldn't be like that. So the likes and dislikes, if they are dissolved, if the mind is purified, it will come under control. A controlled mind is one where I can feed it a thought, because now it is listening to me. So that's why I have to understand that I'm not the mind. I have to understand that this is like a truant child and it's running around here and there. I have to bring it back. And therefore, it's the, always they say tame the mind rather than force. So by whichever way you tame the mind is up to you. In the previous verses, Bhagwan said, you can tame the mind by sankalpa prabhavan kaman tyaktva. By renouncing the sankalpas, you can tame the mind. That, you know, there is nothing, but train the mind. You know, there's no happiness in the world. Don't run after it. So a controlled mind is one where we can feed it thought. That is the kind of mind that we want in the seat of meditation, because then we would feed it the thought aham brahmasmi. And if it is under our control, it will stay on that thought. That is what it is. And a controlled mind is a peaceful mind, because absence of likes and dislikes is what is causing agitations in our mind. If we can neutralize those, automatically there will be peace. They're not two different things. Like, you know, I will neutralize the likes and then somewhere along the line I'll find peace. No, they're actually peace and neutralization are directly proportional. So the more neutralization of likes and dislikes you do, the more peaceful the mind will be. They go hand in hand. So if you do 50% of neutralization, 50% peace, 60%, 70%, 80%, that way. And if it is under my control, if the mind is under my control, then it will do what I'm asking it to do. That is what is meant by control. Now, what do we say? Control, right? I control the heat in the house means what? When I want it, I reduce it. When I want it, I increase it. So it is doing what I want it to do. So a controlled mind is one which will do what I'm asking it to. So in the seat of meditation, when I ask it, now you've got to stay calm and stay at this thought, it will stay. So the mind is very unsteady and fickle. There is no doubt about it. It is wandering. That is also no doubt about it. But what Bhagwan is saying is, in the seat of meditation, at least this yogi, and of course those who have reached that stage, they will be able to do this much easier. So from there, you bring it back and you keep it under control and keep it under the control of the self. Even though it is said that keep it under the control of the self, it doesn't mean that mind and self are different. Right now, we feel they are different because the mind is full of thoughts. Okay, so keep it under this control means keep it under control basically. And as the thoughts dissolve more and more and more, the self will shine more and more and more. And when the self shines more and more, there will be more peace and more bliss. And that is what he's now, what will happen? Like, okay, from wherever my mind was wandering, I brought it back and now it is under my control. Now what? That is what Bhagwan says in the next verse 27.
Prashanta manasam yenam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham.
Supreme bliss verily comes to this yogi whose mind is quite peaceful, whose passion is quietened, who is free from sin and has become Brahman. So 26, he said, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. Okay, fine, Bhagwan, I brought it back. Now what will happen? Now he tells the result. He will attain Prashant. His mind will become Prashanta. Prakarshena Shanta. Prakarshena Prashanta means that which is beyond Shanti and Ashanti. Shanti and Ashanti are pairs of, it's a pair of opposites. So there is peace and then there is restlessness. Shanti, peace. Restlessness, agitation, Ashanti. So these two are opposites. So if there is Shanti, then there is no Ashanti. And if there is Ashanti, there is no Shanti. But what we want is Prashanti. We don't want Shanti. We don't want Ashanti also. We want Prashanti. So Prashanti becomes that which is beyond Shanti and Ashanti. And it is a state where the presence and absence of objects does not affect the mind at all. So it's not just objects. Presence and absence, presence or absence of situations, persons, objects, whatever. Okay, so where it doesn't matter. So it's beyond Shanti. And because Shanti and Ashanti is like, if I'm carrying some, you know, heavy bag on my right shoulder, then after some time there is Ashanti because now my right shoulder is hurting. So I'll shift the bag onto the left shoulder. Then my right shoulder will be Shanti. It will be peaceful. But then after some time, the left shoulder is going to start hurting. So the Shanti and Ashanti keep like playing with each other. So either there is one or the other. Whereas Prashanti means it doesn't matter. There is no Shanti and there's no Ashanti as well. So that's what Prashanti means. So this is what Bhagwan says, that he will gain Prashanti. He will gain that peacefulness, which is beyond peace and restlessness. Okay? Yenam yoginam sukham uttamam. So yoginam yogi. The practitioner here, the one who is practicing meditation and who has followed these instructions. So he has done this yato yato nishchariti. Wherever his mind was wandering, he has brought it back. He gets sukham uttamam. See, in English, we have this superlative, right? We have good, better, best. There are 3 degrees. There is something which is good, then there is something which is better than good, and then there is something which is best, which is better than the other two, right? So this uttamam is what is best. It's the highest. There is uta and then uttara and then uttama. In Sanskrit, there is uta, uttara and uttama. So uta is where I am getting good. Means uta means synonym with good. Means where the happiness, where the sukha is derived from objects. That is good. You know, of course, if I have a comfortable bed to sleep on, or if I have a comfortable, if it's now it's getting cold, if I have a well-heated home, that is also sukha only, because that is happiness. But that is dependent on the objects. So it's good, but it can't be the best. It cannot be the best because it is a dependent happiness. So it cannot be the best. So that is uta. Uttara is deep sleep. So in deep sleep, I'm unaware of anything, whether it's the house is hot or cold. Once I'm fast asleep, then the heater is on, not on, whether it's freezing cold, not freezing cold, snowing, not snowing, raining, I'm not aware of it. So that also is a type of sukha. There is happiness. There is happiness in sleep. So that is uttara sukha, because it is base. It is not dependent on objects that way. It is because of ignorance deep sleep because the senses are folded. See, this uta sukha, senses are at play. When it is concerning objects, then senses are at play. So I see something nice, I hear something good, I feel happy, I eat something which I like, I feel happy. So the senses are at play. In Uttara Sukha, senses are not at play because they are folded, but I still experience that happiness. But during the experiencing of that happiness, I'm not aware of it. Now, this is Uttamam Sukham, which is neither the Sukha of deep sleep, nor is it the Sukha of the objects. It is not dependent on anything. And this is the That's what is called as supreme bliss. Uttamam. So this is Sukham Uttamam. This is the result of the yoga, of the instructions that were being told in the previous verses. And Upaiti Shanta Rajasam. Then what happens is this Rajas becomes Shanta. Shanta Rajasam means, see, Rajas is the one that is causing all the agitation in the mind. Okay. Agitations do not come from sattva. Agitations do not come from tamas either, because tamas is complete ignorance. Whether there is agitation or no, in deep sleep, what do I know? I'm agitated, not agitated. I don't know anything. So agitation only comes. That's why this only it is mentioned shanta rajasam. It is not shanta tamasam or shanta sattva. Of course, is shant only. So shanta rajasam means where these, you know, this constant craving to do something. We get up in the morning, we always have a to-do list. What should I do? What should I do next? What should I do next? What should I do next? And that is all rajas. So that is become shanta. That is become quietened. It has become. So the rajas has become quietened. And when the rajas becomes quietened, when the agitations reduce, what happens is Brahma Bhuta, he obtains Brahma and he becomes akalmasham. Brahma Bhutam akalmasham. So he becomes Bhut is to become. Bhudhatu. Bhudhatu is to become. So Brahma Bhuta means he becomes Brahman. There's nothing like becoming. He's already Brahman. He realizes himself to be Brahman. And then he becomes akalmasham. So this akalmasham here, kalmasham means impurities. And there are five kinds of impurities that yoga sutras talk about. That is avidya, abhinivesh, asmita, raga, and dvesha. So avidya is ignorance. That is one impurity that we have, and it's ignorance of who I really am. At a lower level, it is ignorance. It is ignorance to think that there is happiness in the world. That is also ignorance. That is not correct knowledge. Okay. So avidya. Then asmita is I-ness. I am the one that is doing this. I am the one that will enjoy. So that is asmita, I-ness. Then there is abhinivesh. Abhinivesh is identification. When I identify with my body, my mind, and my intellect, then I become something or the other. I'm happy, unhappy, I'm intelligent, I'm dull, I'm sick, I'm healthy. So I become something. So that also is an impurity. So that is abhinivesh, identification. And then raga and dvesha is likes and dislikes. So this person who has now brought his mind to be steady in that one thought of aham brahmasmi becomes Brahman. Means he realizes himself to be Brahman, so Brahma Bhutam, then at that stage he becomes a Kalmasham, because there is no identification with the body, mind, and intellect. So Abhinivesh is gone. Asmita, if there's no identity, the I-ness is gone, because he realizes that he is all. That is what he realizes. So that is gone. Raga Dvesha cannot be there. And then obviously Avidya is gone. And therefore he becomes a Kalmasham. So mind becomes prashanta, extremely peaceful. He attains this uttamam sukham, this extreme peace, extreme bliss. The rajas becomes quietened. The rajas becoming quietened doesn't mean that the realized master stops working. Some of them may stop working, like Raman Maharshi we have seen, Tapon Maharaj we have seen. But then we have on the other side, Swami Vivekananda, Gurudev, right? So we see both. So Shanta Rajasam, in there, it is really, the rajas has become very, very shanta. In these cases, Swami Vivekananda and Gurudev, the rajas is shanta for them also. Why? Because the activity that is being done is not done out of ego and egocentric desires. It is not done for their personal gain. And when the actions are only for the good of the totality, they don't agitate. Because then they are coming from the self, not from the ego. What is agitating us is because it is born out of ego. That's why this rajas is, we call it as agitation. But when we see extreme activity in realized masters, like we have seen in Gurudev, extreme activity, that is also rajas, but it is predominantly driven by sattva. And because of that, it doesn't cause any agitation in his mind. It never did. Okay? Because every action that he did was never for himself or his own personal gain. And that's what it is. Okay, so this is Prashanta Manasam Yenam Yoginam Sukham Uttamam Upaiti Shanta Rajasam Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. He becomes Akalmasham. Alright, then what happens?
Yunjaneva Sadatmanam Yogi Vigata Kalmashah Sukhena Brahma Sausparsham Atyantam Sukham Ashnute.
The yogi, always engaging the mind thus, thus means in the practice of yoga, freed from sins, easily enjoys the infinite bliss of Brahman contact. Yunjan neva sadat atma, yunjan neva, yuj dhatu, to join, from where yoga word comes, and so we have seen that, yuj is the dhatu there, so yunjan neva. Sada Yunjan. Sada means forever. Forever now he is united with who? Atma. Atman or Brahman. Okay, he's this thing. And such a yogi, Vigata Kalmashaha. So Vigata Kalmashaha, Vigata without, again impurities. So we have seen the impurities in the previous verse. But here also, impurity also means all ego-created false notions. Okay? Starting with, there is happiness in the world. There is an ego-created false notion. So all the false notions are gone. If you see in Yoga Sutras, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, then he talks about 8 types of kalmashas. Okay? He only talks about the 5 kleshas also. He only talks about this. So this kalmasha, one is vyadhi. Vyadhi is diseases of the body. One thing we must understand, that if he becomes free of disease of the body, we can say, but Gurudev had bypass. Okay. So, what? See, free for a realized master, for us, okay, let us first explain for us. If we get some bypass surgery or something like that, what we think is, I got it. I am sick. I have to undergo surgery. Okay. When we say that he becomes free of kalmasha, means what? He says, this is not happening to me. It is happening to my body, which I've got no concern with. And that is what is meant by he becomes free of disease. That doesn't mean that he will not get disease. Understand that. Understand. Body will, if it is to be diseased, it will. Tapon Maharaj was sick. Raman Maharshi had something. Ramakrishna Paramahansa had cancer. So, Gurudev had bypass. So that is not what is meant, that he becomes free, means that he'll never have any disease. No. But he is beyond the body. So even when the disease comes, he doesn't say, I am diseased. Like we would say. This is what we would say. Oh my God, I've got this. Now I'm worried. Whereas they say, no, it's the body has got it. What has it got to do with me? And that's has to be understood. Okay. So when we say he becomes Vigata Kalmashaha, without any kalmasha, without any disease or impurities, it doesn't mean that he will not get it. He will get it, but he will say, it's got nothing to do with me. Whereas we will say, it is me. Now I'm upset. Sorry. So the first thing is vyadhi. Second thing is disinterest. He will not lose his interest in this practice. What happens to us is we do practice and then there are times when we let go. So that doesn't happen to him. Saushay goes away, doubt. Even though we practice, sometimes we think, do you think I'm really Brahman? This, that. But for him, he will not have any doubts anymore. Alasya, laziness, there will be no laziness. He will be always in that supreme, you know, consciousness. Then there will be absolute dispassion, avirati, that is absolute dispassion. Bhranti darshan will not be there. So unclear knowledge, the knowledge will be crystal clear. See, for us, we have the knowledge, and there are times when we feel that, oh yeah, I understood this very, very well, but then suddenly we kind of lose it. Okay, so he will not have that. He will never lose that knowledge. And then another kalmash is unable to withdraw completely, which again he will not have. These are what we have, which he will not have. He will become free of these kalmashas. So one is disease, one is disinterest in yoga, one is doubts, one is laziness, one is absence of dispassion, one is unclear knowledge, sixth is unclear knowledge, unable to withdraw completely, and then not doing wholeheartedly. These are the kalmashas. These are the impurities. These are the sins also, you can call. So he becomes vigata kalmasha. So he becomes freed of all these. That's why I told you, Vadi becomes free of disease means don't think that his body will never get diseased. Yes, it will get diseased. Okay, but he knows that it is his body and not him, as opposed to us who we think that it is me. Sukhena brahma sparsham. So sukhena, very easily. Sukhena here should be taken as easily, not happiness. So very effortlessly, let's put it that way, effortlessly. Brahma sparsham. So it's touched by Brahman. Means what? It become Brahman. Not that there is some other Brahman which is touching him or anything like that. Not like that. Atyantam sukham ashnute. So he enjoys the infinite bliss of Brahman contact, Gurudev has written. But contact, not Brahman contact, becoming Brahman. So he is one with Brahman. So that's what it means. So he enjoys that infinite bliss. These are the results that Bhagwan is telling, okay? Because we are always saying, what is in it for me? What will I get if I do all this? This is what you will get. This is what Bhagwan is telling. This is what the yogi gets if he this thing. Okay, so then what happens? Then after this, what is his state of mind? This is what now Bhagwan is explaining in 29. Sarva bhutamasthan, sarva bhutasthamatmanam, sarva bhutani chatmani, ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. With the mind harmonized by yoga, he sees the self abiding in all beings and all beings in the self. He sees the same everywhere. So sarva bhutastham atmanam. Sarva bhuta beings. Bhuta is beings. So all beings, and all beings means not just human beings, animals, plants, everything. So it's not, they're not saying manav, bhuta, they're saying bhuta is being. So anything that is living includes all the species. Okay. He sees himself in all of them. He sees the oneness with all. And then sarva bhutani cha atmani. This is a description of the tvam pada. You know that Mahavakya is that tatvam asi. Tvam, this is thou. This is how he's now seeing himself. Okay, so he sees himself in everybody, all the beings, animals, plants, humans. And then he sees sarva bhutani cha atmani, and he sees the Lord in all. He sees himself in them and he sees the Lord. He seeing himself in all, we can relate it very well as parents. We see ourselves in our children. You know that identification that we have with the children? That's why when the child is happy, we feel happy. When the child gets first class, I'm the one that's distributing sweets. Child is not bothered also, but I'm, oh yeah, you know, that is what is meant by he sees himself in all. Now with him, what is happening is, he doesn't say only my child, he's looking at the entire world. and he is identifying with them. We only identify with our own children. We see ourselves in our children, and our happiness and our sadness is on their happiness and sadness. If they are happy, we are happy. If they are not happy, we are not happy. And that is what identification is. But we only have it with our children. He has it with everybody. Okay. And ikshate, your ikshate is to see. Yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshana. Sarvatra samadarshana means he sees sameness in all. Now, how is that sameness possible? Okay, because obviously what you see a animal and you see a human being and what, they're both same. Not like that. But what is meant by samadarshana is he remains unaffected by either one. Like what, to give you an example, if it is us, what we do is if somebody comes and asks us for help, we'll say, oh, do I like this person or I don't like this? Is he my friend? Okay, I'll help him. I don't like him. He's not a good friend of mine. I will not help. Now, that is not samadarshana. Okay, this is what we do. Whereas him, samadarshan is, he knows that this is a friend and this is one who is criticizing me. So he knows that. But when they approach him, his behavior towards them will be the same. Samadarshana, that is one thing. This yoga yuktatma means the one who is joined with yukta, he's become yukta, he's become endowed with yoga. Yoga is what again? Coming from yuj to join. So he has become endowed by joining with Brahman, means he has become one with Brahman. So the in the initial stages, what the practice is, that even for us, we can start this practice, is that we must think ourselves to be the witness of our own thoughts and own body. So which means if you want to be a witness of your body and thoughts, and I already told you in the previous verse that if Bhagwan has said I can control my mind, the first thing is to understand that I'm not the mind. And that is what this yoga yuktatma also. So the first step is to understand that I'm not the mind, I'm not the body, but I am a witness to whatever is happening in the body and I'm a witness to whatever thoughts are going through my mind. Okay, so that is the first step. Then recognize, then be a witness to everything else that is happening in the outside world as well. Okay, so not only that you're witnessing your own body and your own thoughts, but you're also witnessing everything that is happening outside. Sant Tukaram of Maharashtra, he has given a very great Ovi, they call. So it's a verse in English, verse, where we say shloka in Sanskrit. In Marathi, it is called as Ovi. It's like two lines. And there he says, Tukamani in Sant Tukaram says that you keep quiet and watch whatever is happening in the world. This is that instruction, witness. Remain in a witness position means you do not comment and you do not judge. That is what we are constantly doing. Based on our likes and dislikes, I'm constantly commenting. Oh, she's not dressed properly. Oh, he did this. She did that. So these type of comments and judgments should be avoided. If I can avoid those and I watch and see in the initial stages, we will notice that maybe this person is dressed well or not dressed well, whatever. But the first thing is not to verbalize it. Don't say anything. Try to be in the witness position. Say that, okay, this is what Gita, Bhagavad Gita is, Bhagwan is telling me. Even though I don't like her clothes or his clothes or whatever they said or whatever, however they behave, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to just stay neutral. So first, practice being a witness to your own body and your own thoughts. Second, try to be a witness to somebody else's body and everybody else's everybody else around you. The third step is to recognize that the witness in me, because when you're witnessing others, they're also witnessing you. So the witness in me and the witness in them is one and the same. That is the third thing. That is this. When you recognize that, it becomes sarva bhutam bhutastam atmanam. So when you recognize that the witness is the same, then you see that oneness between you and them. Then you will start. Otherwise, you're constantly seeing differences. Okay? So when you recognize that the witness in me is the same witness in everybody else, sarva bhutastam atmanam will automatically happen. Means you will start seeing yourself in them. You will start seeing that. Okay. And then Sarva Bhutani Cha Atmani. So he sees the self in all. So in the bit, himself he sees in all, and he sees the Lord in all, the self. That's how it is. And then the recognition is also there comes that I, the witness, is the same as the Lord, and is the same as these people, as the entire universe. And that's why this Samadarshinatva comes, means the seeing everything equanimously. Now the question is, whatever is being seen, is there a relationship with the witness? That is the next thing. Because I know that it's all one, but I'm seeing things. Is there a relationship between what I see and what I am? Is there a relationship? So the answer is no. There is no relationship. Why is there no relationship? Because the witness position that I am at is the absolute reality. And the things that I'm seeing are the transactional reality. There are three realities, okay, that Vedanta talks about. One is the illusory reality. One is the transactional reality. And the third is the absolute reality. If I were to give you an example in our day-to-day life, then dream is the illusory reality. Okay, so whatever I see in my dream, when I wake up, I immediately come to know that it was an illusion. Though while dreaming, I think it is very real, but it is. So it is, that's why it's called illusory reality. It is called reality. Why? Because during the dream, it was very real to me. I was extremely afraid of the tiger. I was very happy about whatever lottery I won. Whatever happened in the dream, I went through all the emotions, happiness, sadness, hunger, thirst, jealousy, kindness, whatever I saw in the dream, I've gone through all those emotions. And at that time, they were extremely real to me. That's why it is called as illusory reality. But it is illusory because right upon waking up, it gets negated. Then there is a transactional reality in which we are all, like I'm speaking, you're listening. This is a transactional reality. I go to the bank, I withdraw money, I go to the superstore, I buy something, I cook something, I eat, I dress up, I go out, I do exercise, I do this, that, etc., etc. This is all transactional reality. And it is also called as reality because to a certain extent it is real. But this transactional reality also gets negated in samadhi, in the absolute this thing. So the absolute reality, the witness is the absolute reality whom this yogi is identifying with. And because of that identification, he is now observing this entire world in front of him. And he knows and he can see the self in all. Okay. So whatever is being seen is a transactional reality. It can never have any relationship with the absolute reality. The only relationship is that of superimposition. So the witness is the substratum and whatever is being witnessed is a superimposition. Our most famous example of snake and rope. So when I walk into a dimly lit room and in the corner there is a, suddenly I see a snake and I'm afraid, but then my friend walks in, turns the light on and says, don't be afraid, it's not a snake, it's a rope. Okay, so the snake has got transactional reality and the rope has got the absolute reality. We call that snake as a transactional reality, quote unquote, because when I was seeing that snake, I was afraid. I thought it was real and it created fear in my mind. Okay. But when the light was turned on and when I saw the rope, that reality got negated. And that's why I put it as transactional reality. So while it is happening, it is very real, but afterwards it gets negated. But this absolute reality never gets negated. And therefore, the transactional reality can never have any relationship with the absolute reality. The snake can never have any relationship with the rope. The snake cannot harm the rope by its poison. If you were to ask the rope, are you not afraid of the snake? The rope will say, what snake? Where is the question of being afraid? There is no snake. What are you talking about? Okay, so please understand this. So the witness, and this is what is meant by yoga yuktatma. Yoga yuktatma, the person in the beginning stages has practiced being a witness to himself, his own body and thoughts, then practicing being a witness to everything around him, then recognizing that the witness in me and the witness in them is one and the same. So abiding in that knowledge, in that firm knowledge, he becomes samadarshinaha, means he looks at everything with an equanimous mind, equanimous vision, because he's seeing himself in all. How can he see differences? For us, what is the difference for us? Only my children only I see as me. Everybody else's children I don't see as me. That is the difference. Okay? So that's why we are not yoga yuktatma. We can become, but we are not as yet. Sarvatra samadarshana. Now, this thinking, this is through jnana. This, what I have explained to you, is through knowledge, which is attainable. But the same thing can also be achieved through yoga, Hatha Yoga. So Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the Ashtanga Yoga, that the last one is Samadhi. Understand? So there is this Yama, Niyama, Pratyahara, Pranayama, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. So that also can be done through yoga. But here Bhagwan is not talking about yoga. Bhagwan is talking about knowledge. So that's why he said, you understand that there is nothing. This is all in your understanding. If you become firm, then you will become closer to becoming yogi yuktatma. Okay, through understanding, through knowledge. But you can do it through yoga as well. That is possible too, because basically it is what controlling the mind. Okay, and yoga also is doing the same thing. Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Now, I don't know about this Bikram Yoga, but Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, if you follow, then that is the same idea. They are focusing the mind. They are controlling the mind. They're making it single pointed. They're doing the same thing. Okay. To reach the final stage of Samadhi. In yoga, then there will be Savikalpa Samadhi and Nirvikalpa Samadhi, etc., etc. So that is there. Okay. Then next, what happens? Verse 30. Verse 29 is a description of Twampada and verse 30 is a description of the Tatpada. Tattvamasi Mahavakya is there from Chandogya Upanishad. So that was Twam. This is now Tat. Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati Tasyaham Na Pranashyami Sachamena Pranashyati. He who sees me everywhere. Now, M is with a capital M. It's a capital M. Bhagwan is talking about himself, but please understand that Bhagwan is not talking about him as the form of Krishna. He is talking about himself as the Supreme Consciousness. Okay? So don't think that, oh, now see, this is what people will then say, oh, this is the personal God. This is how they will refer Ishkon. Ishkon, if you read their Bhagavad Gita commentary, there they only talk about the personal Godhead of Krishna. So they only believe that there is only Krishna, there is nothing else. So this type of verse, they will say, he says me, who sees me. That means the personal Godhead of Krishna. That is not what Vedanta says. That is not what we say. Jnana says this me means it's not the personal form of Krishna that he's talking about. He's talking about himself as being the Supreme Consciousness. So the witness, the final witness. So he who sees me everywhere, because that's what's happening now, right? In the previous verse, we saw the Tvam Padam Shodhanam. There Tvam Padam Shodhanam means purification. And here it is discovery. This is Tat Pada Shodhanam. Tatpada Shodhanam is discovery of the self, not purification, because the self, there is nothing to purify in the self. So Shodhanam has both meanings, purification and discovery. Here it means discovery. Previous verse it meant purification. So he who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, he never gets separated from me, nor do I get separated from him, because this is a point of no return. He has found his identification. He has identified himself with the Supreme Consciousness. So because of that, that's why he sees himself in all, because he has gotten his identity with the Supreme Consciousness. So he sees Supreme Consciousness everywhere. He doesn't see anything else. And then at all the beings that he sees them as being in the Lord. That's why in chapter 11, Bhagwan will show the Virat Roop, where Arjun sees everybody in he. That is a physical representation of this verse. And sees everything in me. This Bhagwan has actually shown that to Krishna. How everything is in me. That comes in chapter 11. Okay. So this is a vision. Here it's a vision. There physically he showed to Arjun. But this is a vision that the yogi attains in the seat of meditation when he has now found his oneness with the Lords, with the Supreme Consciousness. He sees the Supreme Consciousness everywhere and he sees everything existing in that Supreme Consciousness. Okay? If for those of you who have sort of heard chapter 11 or read or have an idea of chapter 11, that when we do it, you will know that the entire huge Virat Swarupa Bhagwan shows, and in that he sees everything. He sees birth, death, disease, everything. The entire world, Bhagwan shows him in that Virat Roop, and that is what this is. And sees everything in me. He never gets separated from me. How can he? He's united with the Lord. Is there any question of him being separated? There is no question of him being separated. Okay, so this is how we do it through knowledge. All right. Now,
sarvabhutasthitam yomam bhajate katvamastitah sarvathavartamanopi sayogi mai vartate.
31 refers to asi, tatvam asi, the verb. So this is what it's referring to. He who, being established in unity, worships me, who dwells in all beings, that yogi abides in me, whatever be his mode of living. Okay, so sarvatha vartamanopi. Sarvatha vartaman api means it is a sense of I in and through all. See, if we take our own body, I have a sense, each one of us has a sense of I in every part of our body. That is the reason that when we bite our tongue, we don't punish the teeth. Because tongue also I know is I, teeth also is I. Now who to scold, or when the finger pokes the eye, then we don't cut the finger off. The finger only then rubs the eye. The same finger which poked the eye will rub the eye. So there is that feeling of I-ness in all. But unfortunately, I only have it in my own body. I don't have it in everybody else. Whereas this yogi now, that same feeling that we have in our own body, he has it in all the beings in the universe. That is what is meant by sarvatha vartamanopi. Okay, so the I-ness is not compromised. For us, I-ness is very limited and therefore it is small I. It's I means it's my body is I, or at the most my children, my family, my husband, my wife. At the most my family, I will go I-ness. But I do not have a sense of I-ness in everybody else. I don't think that. So what happens is when he has this I-ness, see, will I do anything to hurt my own leg? Because I have a sense of I-ness. It's my leg only. I'm not going to do something to hurt my leg. Actually, it's very funny when you exercise, you know, there are certain exercises where the other muscles help. And that's what I thought of when I was reading this, is that you are, whatever, you're doing your bicep, you know, or tricep curls or pulls or whatever. the abdominal muscles are helping, or if you're doing leg raises, leg lifts and all, the arms help, or you're doing single, you have to stand on one leg and sit and stand and all, the arms help. And that's the feeling of oneness, because everybody is helping, every muscle helps the other muscle achieve the goal. So there is, and that comes from a sense of, it's me only. It's not like, oh, why should I help? Let them fail. Let the legs fail. No. It's not like that. Whereas we do that with others. So this is the sense of I-ness that this yogi gets with everybody. Okay. So just as I have I-ness with me, with the all the parts in my body, the yogi has it with all the beings in the world. And just as, because I have this I-ness in my body, I will never do anything to hurt any part of my body. He has that I-ness, so he will never do anything to hurt anybody else. Okay, because there is a sense of I-ness. There's nothing I will do to hurt my own children, right? Because that identification is there. I mean, inadvertently it may happen, but on purpose I will never do it. So same way, he having that I-ness with everybody will never hurt. And therefore Bhagwan says that whatever be his mode of living, means Bhagwan knows that his mode of living cannot be anything but perfect. That's why, because you might say, whatever means what? What if he's a thief? He will never hurt. He will give his stealing away. He will give that part away. We saw it in Valmiki, right? He was a dacoit. But once he realized, he became a saint. So Bhagwan knows that. So Bhagwan says, whatever. So for us, we can say in this, what in the modern context, what it's if he chooses to live like Tapon Maharaj or Raman Maharshi, fine. It's fine. And if they want to do work like Swami Vivekananda or Gurudev, then that's fine too. So whatever be his mode of living. Because Bhagwan knows that no matter what he does, he's going to do it for the good of the totality. He's never going to hurt anybody. Because he has this sense of oneness, sarvatha vartamano. And then what happens is, and then whatever hurts others hurts him too, because of that sense of I, right? Like I said, we as parents, we see ourselves in children. So if there's anything which hurts them, it hurts us too. So if he's seeing that identification with the entire universe, then if something hurts somebody else, he hurts too. So he will never do anything to hurt anybody. And therefore Bhagwan says, it doesn't matter what his mode of living is. He can live as he wants because he knows that he's going to live correctly only now. Now that he is united with me, whatever activities he is doing, he is with me, and I'm the one, only Bhagwan knows that I'm the one that is functioning through him, because there is identification. Okay. So, and obviously he's going to worship. So now Bhagwan is introducing devotion also, because that's what will start from the next chapter. So he says, Sarva Bhuta Stitam Yomam Bhajate Katva Mastitaha. So he, seeing the Lord everywhere in this universe, he has no other choice but to worship, because he's now seeing the greatness and glory of the Lord. And this is, like I told you, this Bhagwan will show in actual, physically he will show Arjun in chapter 11. So when he sees that, he is so humbled. Arjun is very, very humbled by seeing the vastness of that Virat Swarup. So now what this yogi, without physically seeing the, he's seeing the entire universe, and he's seeing himself as the substratum of the universe. So he will not hurt anybody, and he will always worship the Lord, right? Because the devotion will come. When you see something that great, the love and devotion will come. All right? Okay. So today we'll stop here at 31. Are there any questions? No questions. Okay. So next week, 32, actually what I was going to say, Abhimanyu, you're there, and Ashok, you're there too. I know that it's very sweet of you to say that I'll be really busy and that we shouldn't have class on the 20th. We can't have class, unfortunately. I have to attend that startup meeting. There's problems now that in the building also, so we need to talk to the management company. That's a different matter. But what I would really like to do is finish the chapter, because you know what? In Marathi, we have a saying, the elephant has gone and only the tail remains. Because we are already on verse 32 now, and there are only 47 verses. Now, next week, I will do quite a few verses as well, because now the next two verses, there's not much explanation. Arjuna Vacha, there's not much. So 35, even if I go up to 40, then there are only 7 verses that remain. And so what I'm getting at is that in the new year, we can start a new text when we start a new, rather than have this little portion remaining. I think that we should complete it. I don't know how your schedule is, because 19th evening I'm free, which is a Sunday, but I don't know how you guys' schedule is. We can take a class on 19th evening. I can finish it, or we can take it on 21st so that I can just finish the chapter. The other alternative is we can take it 17th, I'm coming back. We can take it on that Monday, but then we're getting into Christmas. So I would like you to think about it and see if, you know, if all of you guys are free on 19th evening instead of 20th Monday evening, we'll have it on Sunday evening and we'll complete the text. And, you know, because then very little is remaining, Abhimanyu. We shouldn't leave it now.
Okay.
Because you lose the link.
If you're okay with it, I'm pretty sure, you know, we will try and meet.
Yeah, let's have one more class. Like next week, of course, 13, there is a class, and let's have one more class. I'll finish the chapter. If we have to go a little bit over, it's okay. We'll just, that way what we have done is, for this year, we've completed this. Then in January, when we start, we can start a new text. And that's the next thing that you guys have to also tell me, what text you'd like to hear.
Okay.
So you decide whether you want to have it on 19th Sunday, because sometimes people have programs on Sunday evening, but Monday is working day, or 21st. Either way is okay with me.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the thing. Just for a little thing, we must not leave the chapter. It's so beautiful anyways. That's all. Is there any questions? Are there any questions? No questions?
Okay. On the last verse, you said that he will worship anyways, but when you reach that point and you realize, do you think there's still need for worship, you know, like
no, at that level? No, there is no need for them, but to role model, they will do it.
Okay.
Gurudev did all Vishnu Sahasram chant, every camp he used to have that, right?
It's just to
Because otherwise, you see, there are some people who are not thinking, they'll say, oh, he doesn't do, so why should I do? Are, but there's a vast difference between, so they will do it so that they set an example for other people.
Okay, understood.
Yeah, they don't need to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
Right? But those who are in the community, like Gurudev and Viveka Swami, Tapon Maharaj and Raman Maharshi, they did not even ask people to come to them, right? So there was no question of role modeling, nothing. They said, we are just sitting. You want to come, you come. But those who are in the society, moving around, these two were moving. Gurudev was, I mean, you know more than I do. So he will do, right?
Yeah.
For that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, okay. So we'll close. We'll meet you. I'll meet you next Monday.